Ladies and gentlemen, we'll go ahead and open the committee. We welcome you this afternoon to the House Committee on Revenue. And today we have a couple of housekeeping items which we'll go ahead and postpone until we have more of our members of our committee here. Paul, any introductions that you may have today?
Mr. Chair, this is one of the items, one of the main items on your work plan is the Oregon's estate tax. There were some changes made in the last session, but there's been a series of important changes at the federal level, which has put the whole estate tax arena in flux, and we just had a court decision come down Friday from the state of Washington regarding the steps they have taken and ruling that they're not consistent with the Washington Constitution and requiring a refund of back state tax collections in Washington. So Elizabeth will talk about that and kind of where we are currently with the estate tax and some of the implications of the Washington decision and the federal changes that are still in process.
Thank you. And then, Elizabeth, we'll probably interrupt you when you see that we've got a full dais up here, and then we'll just make some announcements for working purposes and some housekeeping issues, and then we'll just continue on. So if you'd go ahead and get us started. I know this is an issue of great import and interest from many of our members. Thank you. Please proceed.
Chairman Butler and committee members, for the record, I'm Elizabeth Martin-Mahar with Legislative Revenue Office. And so everyone knows, too, what you have in front of you also is the Supreme Court decision, just their write-up and stuff just from the state of Washington, just so you can have it in front of you and glance through it as you'd like. And also, you'll all be happy to know I only have about 16 slides here today, and we're not in the 30s or the 40 numbers. So I'm only going to hopefully take about, a half an hour at the most, and then we've got two other people, a CPA, Doug Henney, and then another attorney who specializes in estate taxes, Jeff Shane, here also, to kind of answer some questions for you. So basically, I'm just going to try to give you the, 1,000-foot level and just try to give you a good overview of the revenues that we're collecting and kind of the makeup of that, and then go into the CPA and the attorney can discuss more details and what they've seen in implementing the estate tax in Oregon. So now what we have, I just want to make sure everybody's clear, too, because we had some confusion when we were talking about these taxes in the first orientation as far as what are the definition and what are we really talking about. So to begin with, when we talk about transfer taxes, what we're talking about to begin with is the estate tax. And the estate tax, what that means is it's a tax that's applied to the transfer of your taxable value that you have in your estate. So it's a tax that is a function of the value of the estate. So the estate is, if it's an Oregon estate, then it's value that's here in the state of Oregon. It's property in Oregon. It's residents who have bonds and stocks and things. So basically that's an important distinction, is recognizing how you use the term estate tax. It's a tax that's a function of the value of all that property in the estate.
And now, Elizabeth, unlike income tax, it's my understanding that a decedent from the state of Oregon, well, maybe that's under the inheritance tax, a decedent from the state of Oregon who owns property in Idaho and Washington and other states that have taxes, or whether they have taxes or not, and Washington's case now, that decedent would be filing and paying tax only on the Oregon estate, is that correct?
Chairman Butler, that's correct. So if their property, say their main home is in Idaho, but they just say have a rental property or something that's a portion of the state here in Oregon, they're just going to be paying for that property that's here in Oregon.
But if their principal residence is Oregon, they'll still only be taxed for inheritance tax purposes on the Oregon property that they of which they die possessed of.
Representative Butler, that's correct. And then if they're a resident of the state of Oregon, they would also be paying Oregon estate tax on their intangibles, so like their stocks and their bonds and things.
Right.
So that's a clear distinction, and that will become more important as we start having a divergence here between states as far as their treatment. And basically here in Oregon, we are now retaining the estate tax. But if you look at our neighboring states, they're now on the track to eliminate the estate tax. Now, just so everyone's clear, too, because we kind of use this term, gift tax is really a tax that's applied to any transfer of property by an individual during the life of that individual. And so basically a gift tax is the tax that you're paying during the life of that taxpayer for any transfers that they're making to, you know, their kids or grandkids. So basically this is something that here in Oregon we do not have a gift tax, but at the federal level they still do. This is limited each year to roughly $11,000. It's indexed to inflation and stuff. But basically, if the estate tax goes away, as it is scheduled to in federal law, what you'd be left with is the gift tax. Now, we often hear the term inheritance tax. Okay, now this is a little different form of a tax in the sense it's a tax levied on individuals who are receiving that property. Not on the estate, but on the individuals who are receiving the property. And it is based then, depending on your relationship to that decedent. So if you're a son, you would be given a tax rate that was lower than, say, like a cousin or something like that. So you look at the various generations and various relationships between the decedent and the recipient of that property. So this is something that Oregon used to have. Was inheritance tax. That was the first tax that we had on these transfers of wealth. And there are quite a few states that still have that. There are like 10 states that has a form of an inheritance tax. Three of them are actually going to be phasing them out by 2006. But you do have some states that still have inheritance taxes. They're standalone taxes. Mm-hmm. At the federal level, you do not have an inheritance tax.
But ours is now an estate tax, Elizabeth.
Right. Right now in Oregon, we have an estate tax that is the federal pickup tax. Okay, so I'll discuss that in just a minute here. But this kind of gives you a little bit of history here in Oregon. And this is just from 1970 to 2004. But our very first tax of transfer taxes, of the transfer of wealth, was first enacted in 1903. That's when we had our inheritance tax. And then from that point on until 1977, we had an inheritance tax that was a standalone tax, and then we had a gift tax and an estate tax. So we had all of those three taxes. And basically, at this time, this was pretty common that states had their own. And then the federal government started their own estate tax about 1920, or actually the late 1920s. And then from then in 1977 was when the Oregon legislature had discussions on whether or not they should connect with this federal tax because they were having a pickup tax. So what that basically meant was the pickup tax allows states to share in the federal estate tax collection. So it's basically say the federal tax determines the tax liability on this state, and then they say, okay, states, you can come in and take a portion of that tax liability and you can collect it yourself. So what the federal government was giving was a credit for those estates for the amount of tax that you were going to pay to the state. So the tax liability of an estate wasn't going to change, and it wasn't going to be didn't have an additional tax placed on those estates because that was just part of the overall federal tax liability. And at the federal level, the states were given a credit for that amount of taxes that they paid at the state level. So that really became popular then by states to want to connect into the federal tax, estate tax, because they could get this pickup tax, and then they would be able to still have some type of an estate tax, but then not have the tax burden on estates rise. It would just be what is the burden that the federal government is determining. So basically that's what you see too, is what we had during this period in 1977 was we had a phase out of Oregon's inheritance tax and gift tax, and then we connected to the federal estate tax. So that's why you see here then a phasing out of the inheritance tax over 10 years until we ended up then in having only the federal pickup tax then from 1988 on. Then what we had was the federal government made not too many changes during this time period as far as the tax rates and tax structure and stuff for estates. But what we started to see was in 1997 was the first real change in which it was the Taxpayer Relief Act, And at that, in 1997, that's when the federal government started increasing the amount that was the exemption amount for a state. So basically, the smaller estates don't have to pay a tax. And basically, that started increasing from $600,000, which is what it was prior to 1997, to $650,000, and it went all the way up to $1 million by 2006. So basically, what we did then, so for years, Oregon was just connected with the federal pickup tax. And we didn't have to be concerned about whether or not we were connecting with these federal law changes. And during this time period, as you guys remember from the personal income and corporate tax orientations, we're connecting with the federal law pertaining to taxable income. So just like we're connected with the federal law of taxable income, here in Oregon with the estate taxes, there was a question about whether that also included the state tax. So that was some of the confusion a little bit in the beginning about what we were connected to, whether or not we needed to have additional legislation in order to stay connected with federal law changes, because we already had these rolling reconnects with federal tax law for the definition of taxable income for personal and corporate. So basically what we see here is last year's legislation then connected, our last session's legislation connected us with the Taxpayer Relief Act of 97. So you see here that as at the federal level, we were seeing a lowering then of our taxes that we were receiving from estate taxes because we were having an increase in the threshold amount of the exemption. So smaller estates, more estates were not having to pay the estate tax. And then what we saw then after we connected to just the Taxpayer Relief Act of 97, we're now seeing then an increase again in estate taxes. So basically, this is what happened last session. For those of you who are here, I'm sure you remember, you know, vaguely some of these details of House Bill 3072. And this was, we got a lot of discussion last session because it was just, you know, quite confusing what we were actually connected to, and there was a lot of ambiguity in the law. Because there was kind of one statute that said, you know, basically you shouldn't be paying Oregon estate tax if you don't have to pay a federal estate tax. But then there was another law that said we were connected with a specific date and time. So that basically the Attorney General's opinion had been that we weren't connected with the 97 law changes from Congress and we weren't connected with the 2001 law changes. So the Department of Revenue had thought we were, and so that was part of some of the confusion. So from last session, we really did basically make it clear in our law. We are tied to federal law under the 1997 Taxpayer Relief Act, and we have this gross estate value filing threshold. And now, up until this point, up until really 2003, because again, in 2001 and 2002, we thought we were connected with the Taxpayer Relief Act, but we really needed legislation in order to do that. And we also thought that with the changes in 2001, the Economic Growth and Taxpayer Relief Act, that we also were connected with this. So this was something that went up to $1 million right away in 2002. So what we see then is that we were trying to codify in law the things that estates basically were told. They were told by the Department of Revenue that they could have a $1 million estate and that would be exempt from taxes the same as the federal filing threshold. So we had in 2002 the connection between Oregon and federal at both $1 million. So all estates less than $1 million didn't pay any state or Oregon estate tax. Then in 2003, this is where the legislation came, you know, was implemented at the end of session. So it wasn't until July or August. But basically we started the, you know, changes in tax year 2003. So basically at that time we said we're connected now to the Taxpayer Relief Act of 97, so the filing threshold shall be $700,000 for Oregon, but at the federal level it's $1 million. So then you start this disconnect. So some estates between $700,000 and $1 million were going to have to file in Oregon, but not at the federal level. And so that's really what is started now, is that some of these smaller estates are paying here in Oregon, but they don't have to pay and file at the federal level. So in 2004, we're seeing Oregon goes up to $850,000, and the federal filing threshold is $1.5 million, and on up. So basically in Oregon, with this Taxpayer Relief Act that we're connected to, we go up to $1 million by 2006, and we stay at $1 million. Okay, and we're and at the federal level, it's going to go all the way up to $3.5 million. Now, for those of you who haven't been exposed to this, you know, the funny part about the legislation that came out of Congress in 2001 was that, you know, the state tax is repealed for 1 year in 2010, completely repealed, but due to, you know, not having enough exceeding the limits, I think, of how much they could actually reduce revenues by, then they had to, by 2011, reinstate the estate tax. So it's really only repealed for 1 year, and then it comes back again. And then it comes back at the TRA, the Taxpayer Relief Act, in 2001, at that level of $1 million exemption. Now, we all know that Congress is bound to do something, obviously, between now and 2010. So, it's just a matter of time before we see what changes are going to occur again. But this is, you know, kind of the strangeness that we have right now as far as the way the estate tax is. Now,
Elizabeth, okay. This was from the 1997 Act, and we said in 1997 it's not going to be around but just a few years. We're now 8 years into this, and feds still haven't done anything with regard to 2010.
Right.
So I've got everything planned, and I'm just going to die in 2010.
Chair,
we're going to hold you to that.
Good timing. I just let you know if you will never be my CPA if you're recommending I die in that year.
Elizabeth, in your opinion, does House Bill 3072? It's basically what keeps us away from the lawsuit that they've just successfully gone through in Washington. Can you maybe just touch base on that, please?
Chairman Butler and committee members, you're correct. That's exactly right. You know, Washington's a bit different. If you read that court kind of summary, you'll see. But first of all, they had in like 81 an initiative passed that basically said we're going to phase out the inheritance tax and we're going to put into place this federal pickup tax. But we will not be imposing anything larger a tax than what the federal government would be imposing on these same estates. So basically saying, if you don't have to file a federal estate tax, then you don't have to file a Washington estate tax. So that kind of became one problem then, is that there was discrepancy in the law as far as whether or not you were going to have to pay a Washington state estate tax if you didn't have to at the federal level. And then the other issue was that they hadn't had any new legislation to really clean up that discrepancy since 2001. The legislature didn't come in and clean it up. So basically that's what we did in House Bill 3072. We used to have language that was like that. I mean, that said you couldn't pay, or you didn't have to pay the Oregon pickup tax if you didn't have to pay the federal estate tax. But now we don't have that language, and it clearly specifies these limits right there in law. So it clarifies that for us anyway, we have a connection with this Taxpayer Relief Act of 1997. And the other big component of this, which I haven't really touched on, is that the state taxes, the state portion of the estate taxes in the 2001 legislation is phased out, and it's phased out very quickly. So in basically by 2005, there was going to be no state death tax credit at the federal level, so that meant states could not collect a portion of that federal tax liability. So that's also what we did with connecting with the 1997 law, is that we don't allow a phase out then of the state death tax credit. We are allowed the full amount of the full amount that states were allowed to have as a credit for taxes that they're going to pay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Galizio is recognized.
I'm just noticing that you use the term death tax, and I'm wondering if that is either in Oregon, that's used in Oregon and officially in statute, or by the IRS at the federal level?
Chairman Butler and Representative Galizio, no, that's not anything official that's in law. No, it's just kind of, I guess, a slang term, so to speak, that people
right.
will...
So can I follow up?
Follow up, yes, please, Representative Galizio.
there was a very well-funded effort to use focus group language and employ that term. So I'm just wondering if that is a term that should be used, considering we're trying to look at this in a way that's ostensibly objective.
Representative Galizio, that's fine. I mean, I can take it out. It's just something that it really is part of when you have the I don't remember if it's actually termed that way or not, Maximum State. Yeah. I don't remember if it's coming out of the Fed that way or not. I mean, but it's not, I don't think, anything that we have in our state statutes. But, yeah, I can be sensitive to it, but I guess it's already done now for this purpose. But anyway, it's really just, it's just a term that is commonly used, and I know that it's something that, maybe I haven't read the studies that have, kind of focused on that particular word. Okay, so basically with this... with the pickup tax, what you basically again are allowing is you can collect estate taxes on estates when the federal government does not. Because basically what we're doing is we're going to be having the full amount of the estate tax, and then at the federal level they're going to be phasing this out. So you're going to see then a disconnect as far as how much you're going to be allowed to have as a credit at the federal level versus how much you're going to be paying at the state level.
So in filing a death tax return now, a federal death tax return, is the excess over $1 million on the state of Oregon a deduction against the death tax return on the federal? In other words, if the folks are paying for deaths in 2004 and they've got a $2 million federal estate, is the additional tax on the amount over $850,000 that's payable to Oregon a deduction against the estate tax of the $1.5 million credit from federal?
Chairman Butler, at the federal level, they're going to get a credit, but it's going to be phased out, right? So they're going to say the maximum state credit that you can receive is 75% of the maximum amount. I mean, it's only 25% of the maximum amount. You're going to be reduced 75%. So the credit is not as large.
But there is not a deduction for the excess amount on the federal tax return.
No.
So it's so in effect, it's a double tax at that point.
Representative Butler, it's just taxing it to the full extent it was before. I mean, it's not like it's new value or anything that's being taxed.
I appreciate that. But before there was a credit, a full credit
right.
given
full
for the,
credit. That's
for
right.
the estate, for the equivalency that there had been in the pre-97 law.
That's right. Okay, so basically that's the point, is that Oregon isn't imposing the maximum amount that is allowed in the state death tax credit schedule. And then the Oregon estate taxes are based on that, still on that federal schedule of that maximum state death tax credit and the federal estate tax liability. So we'll go through a few examples here, but let me just make sure everybody's clear on these schedules here. First of all, the federal estate tax rate schedule prior to 2001, and that was another component of the 2001 changes, were to have the federal tax rates decrease, the top tax rate. So the tax rates used to be from 0 to 55%. Now you can see in 2004, they go from 18% to 47%. Okay, and they will be reducing down to 45% by 2006. Okay, so the main point to remember is just this is a, this is a pretty high, when you get up here to over $2 million, it's the amount of excess and value above $2 million of taxable estate value that the estate has, and then it's at a 47% rate, which is a pretty high rate. And the other point to recognize here is this is taxable estate. Okay, your gross estate value is just the sum of all of your real estate and your any business assets that you have, annuities, you have insurance policies, farm assets, any of that. You just total all those up, that becomes your gross estate value. Then you minus off deductions, just like, we were before with our corporate and personal income taxes. You minus deductions at the federal level, and those are all established in federal law. We connect with all those deductions. There's things like this, funeral costs, fees to attorney fees, and things like if you have any selling expenses for your home, any charitable pledges and things that you're making, all of that becomes a deduction, as well as your deduction allowed for any transfers you're making to your spouse, any marital transfers. So that, when you go to the gross estate value minus deductions, that then arrives at your taxable estate value. Now, so everyone's clear. Now, this is the federal law schedule for the state death tax credit. Okay, so then basically this is looking at an adjustable taxable estate. So it's just basically taking your taxable estate value and less $60,000 to arrive at an adjustable taxable estate.
These are for deaths in 2004.
This is for 2000, and this really is the same. It doesn't matter whether we're talking 2004 or 2003. This hasn't changed. Okay. What has changed is at the federal level, you would be, there's a reduction going on as far as what portion of this maximum state death tax credit you can take. So that's where the, you know, changes are going on, is a phase out of how much you can take it at the federal level. So look at these rates. These rates only go from 0 to 16%. Okay. And again, this is just like our income tax in the sense that it's a, you know, the first $40,000 would be paying a 0.8%. You know, the next $50,000 would be paying 1.6% on up. So it's a progressive tax rate. And the other important point to recognize is this is kind of a cliff. Okay, so you know, the minute you jump up and you get on, you know, you get up to having to pay the estate tax, you know, you have to pay something. I mean, it's not like it's zero here. You know, a lot of us think that these exemptions amount, well, then the minute you go above, say, right now we're at $850,000. If you were $860,000 as far as, you know, your gross estate, then you should only have to be paying a little, you know, 0 or 0.8%. But that's not true. This is on the total value of your estate. Once you're paying the estate tax, you're paying the, your whole estate is paying that tax, not just the incremental value above the exemption amount.
So that's how it's much different than our income tax system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but our income tax, we're paying, you know, if you have less than, you know, $8,000 or whatever, then, you know, you're not going to pay anything. But once you go above that, you'll be, your first portion is still at zero, and that's the same way this is. The important point is we're just all the way up here, you know, when we start talking about, this started, you know, years ago and hasn't changed, and so but our exemption amount has been growing. So that's where you get into some of the confusion. And when you see that the tax on an $850,000 estate is going to be at least $27,600 here, you know, initial credit, I mean, that tells you how much you're going to be paying to the state in the maximum amount, then you can see how that becomes a real incentive not to have to have your state pay those taxes. Okay, so this is just an example, because I know everybody loves examples. I know you guys are just thrilled with examples. But here exactly is an example for $1 million taxable estate. So again, this is 2004. Here in Oregon, we're not at $1 million yet. We're at an $850,000 exemption amount. But in 2001, at the 2004, at the federal level, we're at a $1.5 million exemption amount. Okay, so what we have here in column A is before 2001 federal changes, and column B is after the 2001 federal changes. So this is basically looking at the federal return here and saying, okay, we have a taxable estate. This is $1 million before 2001, and after 2001, you would have the federal tax before credits. This hasn't changed for the $1 million because all we were reducing at the federal level was the top tax rate. If you remember, that was above $2 million. So for these $1 million estates, the federal liability hasn't changed any from 2001 and prior to that. So, but what has changed here is this unified credit, and this is basically taking the exemption amount and converting it to a credit. And so, and it's basically using that table I just showed you as far as the federal tax liability, and what would that be for an exemption amount of $850,000 would only be $287,300 versus at the federal level of $1.5 million, that's $555,800. So that's a difference there of $268,500 as far as the credit amount that they're able to apply. So at the federal level, we see that for $1 million estates, they don't have to pay any federal tax. Okay, but basically, if you had a unified credit amount of what is allowed now in Oregon law, that is only that leaves $58,500 in federal tax liability. Now we go and we look at, okay, what's the state death tax credit allowed against the federal tax? So basically what this is looking at that other table, which is showing the maximum amount of that credit, and for $850,000, it's $33,200. And so you minus that from the federal tax liability, that gives you a net federal tax then of $25,300. So then that becomes the tax that for Oregon you would be collecting $33,200 as far as that's how much you would, the state of Oregon would be collecting. And then basically when you look at the total federal and state tax, adding those two together, you get a tax rate then of about 5.85% as a percent of the taxable estate value. Versus after 2001, the estate is only going to be paying the $33,200 here in Oregon and not at the federal level. So then you've reduced the overall tax burden for that estate to 3.32%. So basically that shows you kind of for some of these smaller estates what's happening. Now for the $5 million estates or anything above the $2 million I was just showing you for 2004, you're also going to see a reduction then in the federal tax before credits. And so that's the big difference here, is that you have a reduction of $170,000 in federal tax liability. Then again, we have these differences in the unified credits due to the exemption amount differences. And then we have the difference in the state death tax credit allowed, because again, prior to 2001, we didn't have the phase out of the maximum state death tax credit, so it was $391,600 for a $5 million estate. But now we're going to have a 75% reduction of that maximum tax credit, so you only have $97,900. So basically, the end result here is the net federal tax after credit has dropped $144,800. And then you see the Oregon tax is the same under both situations, $391,600. So the overall tax burden has gone down, but not that much, 42% down to 39% for a $5 million estate.
And the determining factor for the implementation of Oregon law is the deaths before 2001. Is that why you've calculated both of these for the amount of federal before 2001, or is that just for example purposes?
Chairman Butler, that's correct, because now we are connected to the 1997 Taxpayer Relief Act, which was before the 2001 okay. federal changes. So that's why I'm trying to highlight that.
Okay.
So column A here is really what they're paying here in Oregon.
So after 97, basically. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Now this just kind of gives you an example here of seeing some of, just this is just looking at the tax burden of the Oregon tax alone on estates. And it's just looking at it kind of estates between $850,000 up to $5 million for tax year 2004. And the main, you can see it's a graduated tax, which up to $5 million estates is roughly about 8%, where you saw on that table it can go up to 16%. So as you can see, as the estates would get larger, you would have a larger portion of it up there in that 16% tax bracket, which would then increase that effective tax rate. But the main thing I wanted to make sure you're all clear about, because we, when we first passed this legislation in 2003, there was some concern over just this portion right here. Those estates that basically are at the low end, right close to that filing threshold. And so those, below $850,000 don't have to pay any estate tax. Once they have to start paying, then it's a pretty steep slope here. And as you can see here, it's a much steeper slope between $850,000 and $1 million than it is between even $1 million and $5 million. And it slowly.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Hess.
Thank you. I suppose if I was in that range of $900 or $1 million or my heirs, that it would make more sense to donate to charity $50,000 or to get down to $849,000 rather than pay the tax, which is not a horrible outcome, but that seems like that's the effect.
Chairman Butler and Representative Hass, that's true, and there will be a lot more of that going on. And you can even see when I show you the distribution of returns, there's not me in this category, because most people do have, you know, good estate planners who help them out with that kind of thing. And just remember, this is 2004, so, you know, I mean, we also, you know, could be seeing some of this in 2003 just because people were caught in the idea that they didn't. They had this $1 million filing threshold. We were connected with the 2001 law changes, and they didn't know about, you know, the divergence that we now have.
Thanks.
Okay, so this graph just basically does the same thing. It's just highlighting these estates between $850,000 and $1 million and just trying to, you know, help you realize that, you know, that there is, for a lot of estates that are right here on the cusp of having to pay, you know, they're paying really less than the maximum state debt tax credit. That's because their federal tax liability is less than that credit amount. That's why you're seeing even less, or else they would be right up here with the rest of them, you know, a little above 3% as far as the effective tax rate. So basically, these examples are just trying to illustrate to you and helping you realize that between $850,000 and about $925,000, you've got less than the maximum state death tax credit that they're paying. But when you're looking at it as far as a, you know, an increasing rate, it's increasing at a faster rate than these other estates.
This is why we see articles about the 39% death tax rate at that bottom end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Chairman Butler, when you're hearing those kind of high rates, it's really that they're taking the incremental, mm-hmm. you know, value above whatever, say, like if they were, you know, $860,000 estate. Well, then they're just taking the $100,000, you know, above that they would be paying on and calculating a tax rate on that, not on the total estate tax value.
Right.
Okay. So this just kind of gives you a little bit of an overview of what we've seen as far as the estate tax returns by tax year. And this should, you know, kind of help you see that basically we have a lot of returns that are in the zero category. These are returns that basically they've transferred their property to their spouse, and they just have to file a return in order to do that. So they just defer the tax until the second individual passes away. So, but what you see is the majority of the returns here in 2003 are, you know, really in this category of paying about $25,000 to $50,000 in tax. And then you see, though, that really these folks out here that are paying $500,000 or more in tax is very, very, very small number. You know, not quite 30 in 2003. So, you know, this is really kind of showing you that, you know, you do have some really large estates that are paying the large portion of the tax. And just to kind of help everyone realize, too, of what do we have as far as the types of assets that we see in different estates. And this I just have from the U.S. because we don't have this much detail from the federal government for Oregon's purpose. So just to kind of give you a little bit of an understanding, in tax year 2002 for the U.S., we saw that the largest portion was stocks. Some 36% of the assets were stocks in most estates. And then the next largest here were other assets, which includes like intangibles, art, mutual funds, things like farm assets. And then third here was real estate. And then you see annuities and bonds and stuff and insurance, you know, all pretty much make a pretty small portion of the total here. And cash is, you know, about 11%, so it's quite large, too. But this year, this just shows you Oregon's returns again for tax year 2002 and 2003 by the total gross estate value. So I think the main point is just to look here, okay, between 900,000 and 1 million here. If you look at all of those, for all the returns that are less than a million, in 2002 it was about 11% of all the returns. In 2003 it was about 32% of all the returns. Well, and that's a lot because in 2003 people didn't know about the filing threshold change, and so in 2003 we saw a lot more returns that got caught in the 700,000 to $1 million category, where in the future we probably won't be seeing that many in this category. And then, but what you see here, as far as the number of returns that are greater than 3.5 million, it's only about 10% of all the total returns in 2003, about 12% in 2002. And then this shows you the tax amount that's actually paid. So this just shows you kind of the bottom line here. Now you see less than a million, even though we did see, 32% of those returns that were filed in 2003, they really didn't pay that much of the tax. So what you see is basically they only paid about 4 million of that tax, and roughly that's only about 7.1% of all of the tax that was actually paid in 2003. So I think that's the important point, is even though we might, look at, different filing thresholds and going up to a million quicker. We're scheduled to go up to 1 million in 2006, but if you went up right away, I don't know that you would be really, bringing in that many more estates. And as far as the amount of revenue you would lose, it wouldn't be that big. I mean, it would be about $4 million. And again, this is per year. But you see what you get from this is really this group that is greater than $3.5 million. They paid in 2003 $35 million out of the $55 million of total estate taxes. So, that group is, paying like 63% of all of the tax. And as we saw before, that was less than 30 returns. So that's the important point to recognize. It's a very volatile revenue stream. It really depends on how many large estates you get in a given year and how much, this can, greatly fluctuate. I mean, it went in 2002 from 20 million, and then 2003 it went up to 35 million. I mean, it was probably just one or two large estates that came in 2003 versus 2002.
So if I understand what you're saying, then that, Elizabeth, if federal was right now, or if the state was right now, linked for 2004, 2005, even 2006 through 2008. At 1 million, 1.5 million, 1.5 million, mm-hmm. and 2 million, mm-hmm. that you'd still be collecting 70%+ of the total revenue.
Chairman Butler, that's correct. Yeah, in here in 2003, this was 63%. So and you add in another 6 million here, but yes, some of these smaller estates are not, really, they aren't a large portion of your total taxes being collected. Now, this just shows you our estate tax biennium revenue forecast between 2001-03 to 2009-11. So, if you can see, in 2003-05, we had a pretty big jump here, $130 million, as far as we had some big estates in 03-04, and that revenue stream just kept growing. And so we went from $117 million up to $130. Now we're forecasted to go back down again, $118 million. And that's a lot, again, because this filing threshold is growing. So you should be, seeing some removal of certain estates off of the tax roll.
Representative Berger? Representative Berger.
Is this coming out of the The forecast, and how do they ever derive this if it's all... Come on, Elizabeth, give us a clue. I mean, you just said it's a matter of one or two people dying in this state. How in the world do they take their pulse periodically?
Yep.
Yours won't count here.
Well, Representative Berger, they are looking at long-term trends, and I think what they've seen is, like, this $130 million here, I think in their mind was just kind of a bloop, you know. I mean, it was just a little...
Somebody died.
Yeah, somebody died, and they had a big estate. So, you know, I think you really have to kind of remove those, you know, a few of those big estates and then think, okay, what's the long-run trend in this revenue source? And so that's what you're kind of hitting here. And they are seeing it grow because I think it should be growing. I mean, we've got an elderly population that's growing here in Oregon. So, you know, we've got to go in the right direction. It's a matter of how quickly or whether or not there'd be another, you know, little bloop here of having some other, you know, wealthy elderly who pass away.
Thank you, Elizabeth. I just had to comment.
Just
okay, well, that's the other just last slide here is just really talking briefly about other states. And we've already touched on Washington State. But I'll just, you know, make you all aware that, you know, we're really all over the map now as far as connection. You have the majority of the states that have taken some action to connect to 2001 ECTRA changes. But, you know, really you have about 7 states here out of these 21 that have really just taken temporary measures. They just kind of, they've said, oh, yeah, we'll connect with 2001 changes, but not right now. We'll delay it a couple more years. And so you could, you know, this is really in flux, I think. A lot of states are still trying to weigh, you know, losing that revenue stream and other ways in which they could make it up. So this is something that we, but the main thing to recognize, though, is that all most of these states that have connected with the 2001 ECTRA are in the West. We're surrounded, with the exception of Washington State, which has now had to eliminate theirs, but we're kind of alone here. California and Nevada and Arizona and Idaho, and I mean, you know, everybody's connected with ECTRA changes. So, you know, that is something that, you know, might put more pressure on you as legislators to conform, because we're really the only state now that's kind of implementing our own estate tax. And then you've got really the states that have connected to a fixed date in federal law, which Oregon is, and we're one of these 6 here that has, based on pre-ECTRA law. There are a lot of states in the mid-Atlantic states, and some in the Midwest, like Oklahoma, Nebraska, Kansas, Minnesota, some of the, you know, Michigan.
Rust Belt.
I'm sorry?
Rust Belt states.
The Rust Belt, yeah. So you're seeing a lot of that kind of on the East Coast and then the northern part of the country. There are a few states, as I was mentioning before, that do have their own standalone with a federal pickup tax. But of those 12 states that have that, there will only be 9 states by 2006 that actually continue to impose their inheritance or their estate tax. And most of them are in the form of an estate tax or of an inheritance tax. Then you have 8 states of those that have connected to 2001 ECTRA changes, so they will be phasing out their estate tax to have their inheritance tax stand alone. And then 5 states that have connected to a fixed date in federal law like we have. So I'll just, you know, basically end with that unless there's other questions I want.
Questions, thank you, Elizabeth. The questions for Elizabeth relative to the state and inheritance tax presentation. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. And now we have Doug and Jeff, is it? And colleagues, while we're all together here, tomorrow we've got work sessions on House Bills 2030, 2031, and 2032. We'll be finished up here probably by 2 o'clock, but we need to vacate this room by 2:50 because of other hearings in the building that need this room as overflow. And then we've got further hearings for Wednesday and Thursday on House bills, and your offices will be notified. The good news is that Friday we have no meeting scheduled. The bad news is that beginning on Monday of next week, following the Valentine's Day break, we'll start back at 1 o'clock. And so we're going to move to House time, 1 o'clock, Representative Esquivel. And
the Senate, sir.
Doesn't matter.
We don't know what time the Senate's going to get going, but much earlier than us, anyway. So we'll because we've got to start working a number of bills, and we'll begin some additional hearings. We'll be working and coordinating our efforts with the Senate as well, so that we're not having hearings on the same kinds of issues either. So if you'll make note on your calendar, and then a week from this Friday is when we're scheduled to visit the folks up in Portland that are tobacco stampers on the private tobacco stamping end, and get you some flavor of what the industry is relative to cigarette stamping there. With that, let's continue on then, and if you'll enter and sign in, please, we would appreciate it.
We didn't get any flavors at all.
No.
We didn't even pick on them.
Paul, did I miss anything on our upcoming agenda for the week and starting in the next week?
don't believe so, Mr. Chair. We will. We're finishing the details for next week. We'll have that ready here in a couple of days, so you have to be able to get that on the agenda. That will include a panel discussion of the Tobacco Enforcement Task Force, which should give you some good background for Friday's meeting in Portland.
Right. That's the Oregon's unique task force, which includes Department of Revenue, Oregon State Police, and Department of Justice, which is basically a one-of-a-kind task force nationwide to try and spur on the filing and compliance with our cigarette and tobacco, other tobacco products. Thank you. Gentlemen? Doug, are you going to start off, or should we turn it to you? Jeff, go right ahead.
Okay. I'm Jeff Sheen, and I apologize a little bit, perhaps, for a bit of a misunderstanding. There's a handout here that has House Bill 2293, and that's one of the bills that deals with inheritance tax, and I don't know if you want me to speak to much of that today or not. But what I wanted to try and do is kind of stay at a kind of a non-technical level and hopefully not as a speaking necessarily as an attorney, but I think the common taxpayer understanding that exists here in Oregon, and hopefully you've got this handout material, is up until the disconnect, taxpayers in Oregon had a common understanding that as long as they had an estate that wasn't subject to federal tax, they didn't have to worry about any Oregon estate tax. In 2003, when we disconnected, that reality was no longer true. And as Beth indicated to you, because of Washington's Supreme Court decision, Oregon now kind of stands alone with being that this principle doesn't apply to Oregon taxpayers, but it applies to every state surrounding us, and all of the Sun Belt states to the south. And while I think the common consensus is, at least among attorneys that I've talked to, is that the Washington Supreme Court, at least the legal principles set forth there, have very little impact on, I think, Oregon's law because of the 2003 legislative session in particular. But I think from a tax policy point of view, one of the things that we attorneys experience, and Doug does, I think, too, perhaps, is when you get Oregon taxpayers that have estates in the 3+ million range, a fair number of those taxpayers have residences or vacation homes in other states, particularly states to the south in the Sun Belt state. So when you're sort of starting to look at revenue, I think one of the things you need to think about is by keeping this tax in place, what's the impact on causing those citizens of our state to say, look, it's better for us to change our residence to Washington. We already know the capital gains trip to go up to Washington to avoid capital gains tax here at the Oregon level. So I think if we keep this tax, and I'm not here to advocate, I'm kind of trying to stay revenue neutral, I think it puts some pressure on taxpayers to say, look, I'll just move my residence to a state that's connected out of and take this out of Oregon. So I think rather than the legal issues of the Washington Supreme Court decision, I think it's the practical issues that need to be considered of Oregon now being a standalone disconnected state on the western region. The second common taxpayer belief, particularly among married couples, was that when the first spouse dies, there will be no federal estate taxes nor state inheritance taxes. In the 2003 session, House Bill 3072 partially restored this principle, but didn't do so completely. And I'll touch a little bit more on that in a few minutes. So as a result of the disconnect now, Oregon descendants have found themselves being faced with paying an unexpected tax, either the surviving spouse in the case of a structure for estate planning that wasn't properly put together, or just because of the disconnect, heirs were finding themselves paying a tax when they didn't expect to. Now, I put a graphic illustration in here of kind of a gentleman wearing two sets of glasses. And as practitioners, we kind of have to do that because when we're dealing with a person's estate as an individual, we've got to look at their estate for the impact of the federal estate. We have to look at the impact of the Oregon inheritance tax, which is looking at federal law prior to ECTA. And now with what Washington's done and some of the other states, we actually have to start looking at what's the impact if they own property in other states. Now, the statute that exists right now, rather than saying Taxpayer Relief Act of 1997, says we are applying the federal tax law as it existed on December 31st, 2000. So that's the way the statute currently reads. So you have to know a little bit to be able to sort out that that means the Taxpayer Relief Act of 1997. We've talked, it's already been presented to you, the exemptions that exist in Oregon. And I think one of the things that has occurred, the reason this has become a problem, is because the federal extra provisions repealed gradually, and now it's effective fully this year, that the state death tax credit was completely repealed for federal tax purposes. So now states are in a position where they have to make a decision whether to collect the tax independently or collect no tax at all. And that's kind of pretty much, I think, where Oregon's at. Yeah. Now, I've just put some illustrations, and basically for 2005 estates, the Oregon exemption is $950,000. Federal exemption is $1.5 million. So if you have $1.5 million estate here in Oregon for this year, the Oregon tax is $64,400. Federal tax is zero. Similarly, in 2006, when the exemption here in Oregon goes to $1 million, federal exemption will be $2 million. So you will have, if you have a $2 million estate here in Oregon, you'll have a $99,600 Oregon tax and no federal tax. Now, one of the problems that this disconnect has posed for married couples is this fairly common structure to have a trust or a will that says, when I die, if I'm the first spouse to die, I want you to place in trust the amount equivalent to the federal exemption amount. And whatever extra is left over can go to a marital trust or pass to the surviving spouse. And we use this process in order to for both persons to take advantage of their federal credit. A lot of trusts for people who have estate planning have trusts designed like this that also use what's called a federal funding formula. They use the federal exemption amount as the basis to determine how much should be in the credit shelter trust. problem that the disconnect creates is that if someone were to follow that language, they would put a million and a half in the family trust or the credit shelter trust, which is the amount that's exempt from federal tax. And now, because it's overfunded for the state exemption amount, the state of Oregon will say, well, where's our tax when the first spouse passes away? And so the legislation in 2003 took some steps to affect this. But if you have a situation where this problem exists, then a surviving spouse is going to be faced with having to give the state of Oregon $64,400 when the expectation is there wouldn't be anything due. The legislation in the 2003 session, House Bill 3072, fixed some of this by allowing partial state Q-tip elections. And this was a good practice because what this would allow to happen is you could still take full advantage of the federal exemption amount, namely $1.5 million, but then you could, out of this credit shelter trust, you could set aside $950,000 that was exempt from both federal and state, and then the extra portion, $550,000, could be set aside to be exempt for federal, but you make a state Q-tip election, so there would be no tax due when the first spouse dies, but then when the second spouse dies, the state would pick up the tax that was otherwise due on the first spouse's death.
And Jeff, that would be without penalty because it doesn't occur until, because of the partial Q-tip election available for the state, that's without penalty until a second death, isn't that the case?
It's without penalty at all. It would be paid if the second spouse's death. And typically the thought was that from a revenue perspective, while this is going to affect the timing issue a little bit, is maybe the state isn't getting some tax dollars as soon as it might otherwise, but chances are that partial Q-tip share is going to grow, so the state ultimately should come out even or maybe a little better because the tax rate will be applied
to the larger amount on the in this case, $650,000 as it grows.
Correct.
And then I used incorrectly the term penalty. At that particular point, then it's assumed that if they're setting aside the amount in excess of $950,000 into the Oregon qualified Q-tip, that the decedent, the second to die, would probably have assets in excess of $950,000 as well.
Correct.
And would then have to pay taxes on both sides of the amounts in excess of $950,000 on the first spouse's death as well as the second death.
That's correct.
Right. Okay.
And then what I guess wanted in this state slide was just to kind of illustrate what's already been illustrated to you, but I think we're more, I guess, marooned, if you will, because of the number of states around us that are disconnected. Now, there is a bill which isn't the subject of today's discussion, but it's House Bill 2293, which creates what's called an Oregon Special Marital Property deduction. And what this is designed to do is to deal with those estates where a credit shelter or a federal exemption trust was created, and it's funded to the federal amount of $1.5 million. Now, it was perfectly proper for estate planners and to set these types of trusts up so that the trustee would have the discretion not only to pay this money to the surviving spouse, but to other beneficiaries, such as children. And it was also possible that you could set these up so that there would be discretionary distribution of income. In other words, it wouldn't all have to be distributed to the surviving spouse. So what we have here is, and I don't know how many, but we have a group of individuals that have estate plans that have not been changed, that were done at a time when the federal law allowed these kinds of plans. But because they have discretionary income to the surviving spouse or have multiple beneficiaries in that trust, they cannot qualify for the marital special Q-tip deduction that the state allows now. So the purpose of House Bill 2293 is to extend essentially a marital deduction provision to those trusts, which will allow the state to restore the taxpayer expectation that no tax would be due when the first spouse dies. Oh, thank you. And it would also protect taxpayers who didn't get their estate plans revised before they passed away, and would help reduce malpractice issues for attorneys who sent letters to their clients, but their clients came back and now said, well, how come we have this tax to pay? You should have told us about this. So that's kind of the purpose of the House Bill 2293.
Now, I just need to state, so that we're on the same page, Jeff, that 2293 has been assigned to the House Committee on Revenue, but the relating clause relating to taxation is far too broad. And so while we may take up that issue, we're going to have 2293 revised to narrow up the relating clause relating to the qualified terminal interest property or something of that nature in the state of Oregon, a Q-tip trust or something.
Well, we understand that that's in process now.
Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't know that, but that's, and if that's what's happening right now, we'd appreciate it.
Okay.
Because in order for us to take it up, we just really need the one of the more narrow definitions and relating clauses. So.
Okay. Now, I think in my one closing comment, and I'll turn it over to Doug, when Beth showed you this federal tax rate schedule for 2004 in her presentation, and I think looking on a going forward basis, if Oregon is going to continue to impose an inheritance or estate tax on Oregon decedents, I would like to see a structure more simplified. And I think one of the things we could do is toss out the federal estate tax rate structure, because that's what's causing a lot of the consternation, is that first dollar above the exemption amount is taxed at 39 or 41%. And that's where that steep curve is. And it creates an awful lot of complexity in computing the tax. And so I think it would be, I think if we went to a system that followed something akin to the state death tax credit rates across the board, in the long term, that would make for a simpler tax.
Well, I appreciate that suggestion and comment, and I guess going along with what I was taking a look at with the number of returns and the amounts of money collected in those estates which would be in excess or at or in excess of the federal, if we just tied back into the federal exemption, it appears to me that that we'd have something in the vicinity of 75 to 80% of all of the returns captured, and that are paying all of the all but of the 130 some odd million. It's all but about $4 million of the 130 some odd million. So, I mean, if we just made it simpler in terms of following federal law, it appears that it wouldn't be that great of a hit economically to the state, and that then wills that had been drafted previously would still have the benefit without having to rely upon a separate state qualified terminal interest property election. So
very true.
All right.
And with that, I'll turn it back.
Thank you very much. Why don't we go ahead with you, Doug, and then we'll ask questions of both of you if we can.
Thank you, Chairman Butler and committee members, for asking me to speak. My name is Douglas Henney. I'm a CPA from Portland. I'm the vice chair of the Oregon Society of CPAs, and I'm one of the owners of a four-office CPA firm with offices throughout the western part of the state. The inheritance tax is something that most CPAs have not really focused on, and I think maybe their clients have even focused on less, particularly on the Oregon. They've always known about the federal, but the Oregon's just been, it's just been either you paid it to the federal or you paid it to the state. It didn't make much difference. In Oregon, has always been a very easy tax to calculate. It's just a one- or two-page form. It was very, very simple. For many years, I've been working with several committees of CPAs focused on Oregon taxes. We've regularly met with the Department of Revenue. For at least 20 years, we've done an analysis for every legislature, trying to compare Oregon's tax law to the federal laws, and assisting the legislature in trying to keep our tax laws as much in conformity with the federal rules as possible. It's been our constant objective to reduce the complexity of the Oregon tax law in order to increase compliance and to reduce the administrative burden of collecting and enforcing the tax on our clients in the state. Because of my work on these committees, I seem to be the person that's getting many questions regarding inheritance tax from Oregon CPAs. Until a couple of years ago, I don't recall ever having a question about inheritance tax. It was a no-brainer, just a short little form. It was totally under the radar of at least all CPAs. Things now are very different. It's quite common, maybe at least weekly, if not every couple of days, that I get questions from CPAs having questions about inheritance tax. And none of the phone calls or emails are from particularly happy practitioners. Let me summarize the issues that they seem to be talking about. The first and I think main one is complexity. As I said before, the Oregon inheritance tax has been extremely easy to compute. The form would just take a few minutes. There's virtually no cost to the client of preparing the form. We're now finding a lot of situations for the smaller and medium-sized clients where Oregon is the only death tax return that has to be filed. In those situations, it's taking our clients many thousands of dollars and probably months of time to get all the information necessary to fill out the forms. And that, in turn, causes a lot of delay in settling estates and settling the trusts before they can get the money distributed to the various heirs. You might think that the CPAs might really appreciate all the extra charge hours and the extra revenues of bringing it in. But in fact, I think virtually every comment that I've gotten, every email, every phone call from practitioners has been the fact that that this is way too complicated, you know, way too costly for our clients, and they gladly throw away the fees just in order to eliminate it. In a lot of these cases, a lot of the clients they've lost a family member, they've lost a friend, and they want to kind of put it behind them, but no, they've got to deal with this inheritance tax return, which will take weeks or months to get filed. The next issue relates to the amount of the tax. Wealthier clients, I think, are usually more in tune with the estate tax and with the inheritance tax. It's really the smaller and medium-sized estates where we see the tax being an issue. Both our members and the clients become particularly incensed when they realize that a few of the subtleties of the tax that you don't necessarily see until you really go through some calculations. Kind of four main areas of questions or concerns that I tend to get is, first, the realization that it gets back to something both Elizabeth and Jeff talked about, is the incremental tax rate. The people that file the first 50, 75,000 of taxable estates in excess of the floor have a very high incremental tax rate. It's like 39-41%, and they can't understand why they're paying an incremental rate of that amount when the wealthy people's incremental rate of any given $100 of income is much, much less.
So Doug, if I understand, and this goes back to a question that Representative Haas asked, so at a rate of 39-41%, they'd still be better off if they kept it and paid the tax than it would be if they just got rid of it and gave it to charity. I guess if they were in a 50% income tax bracket, they still would be better off keeping the money and paying a death tax on it. Is that correct?
That's correct. You know, it would reduce the taxes, but obviously the family is still better off,
right,
by not doing that. Secondly, as Jeff, I think, discussed very nicely, is that the realization that when the first of a married couple pass away, it really has been the intention, and all this structuring of the estate plan, all the discussions with the family, really had the intentions that there be no inheritance tax, estate tax at the first death, and then a lot of surprised heirs, a lot of surprised surviving spouses, when we tell them they're going to have a tax of, it used to be 30 some thousand, now it's 64, and it'll rapidly move up to 99,000 of extra tax that they may have to pay that they weren't expecting. Now, I'll tell them that there might be some things they can do about that. Some situations you really can't do much. It's just what you got to do.
Let me stop you right there, if I could, Jeff, or Doug, and ask Jeff. Jeff, is the if the Q-tip language was set up in the in the decedent's will, and the first death to go, if the Q-tip language was there, is the $650,000 Q-tip available without any major modification of the first will for the state of Oregon, an Oregon qualified Q-tip?
Generally, yes, it is. There may be a court modification that's required, but generally, if the language is there to qualify that trust for Q-tip or marital deduction,
do they have to separate the assets at that point?
Generally, yes.
Between the 950 and the 650.
Correct.
Okay, so that they know which assets are in the Q-tip and appreciating differently than the 950.
Well, and just for accounting tracing purposes, when the surviving spouse passes away, they're going to have to demonstrate what the taxable estate is of the Q-tip trust and the surviving spouse's estate. So,
right, but I guess I'm still interested in the bypass trust and the Q-tip trust at that point.
Well,
they separate those assets physically and the Q-tip, the 650?
It's my recommendation, and not necessarily everyone agrees with this, but would be to separate the trust in the credit shelter trust that's exempt from both federal and state, in this year be 950, and then have a separate share. Again, it's still within the credit shelter trust,
right,
set aside, which is exempt from federal but not from state.
And so you've got some additional accounting of identifying and accounting for those assets and their appreciation, their income and those kinds of things.
You've got two income tax returns at that point. One for the state share and one for the credit shelter share.
In addition to the survivors' individual or joint taxes and then individual thereafter.
Correct.
Right. Thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Oh, that's fine, Representative Butler. And I think that some of the accounting that you'd have to do if you really put it all into one account, one brokerage account, one bank account, would just be a nightmare. It'd be extremely expensive trying to figure out how income gets allocated, you know, how distributions, are they coming out of one or the other or both, and I just think some of the accounting would be a major nightmare. So I think I'd also suggest you put it into a separate account of some sort. The third sort of phone call that I get is the realization that in situations, I guess I have a lot of small and medium-sized clients, and the realization, and most people that contact me, the same thing, the realization that they've got to go through all this time and cost just for an Oregon return. And oftentimes the amount of cost and time allocable to that relatively small Oregon tax is a difficult pill for them to swallow. And the last major issue is some of the issues that have cropped up regarding the ability to gift before death and how that might impact the Oregon inheritance tax. The forms have changed a bit to make it look like you really can't gift before death, but I think there's a lot of confusion in the estate planning community as to how gifts before death affect the amount of the Oregon inheritance tax. It's just been a very complicated and difficult couple of years for at least for CPAs, and I'm assuming for attorneys too. I worked and got my education entirely in Oregon, and I've lived here all my life. One thing that's really difficult for me is to have to suggest to my clients that one easy way to avoid taxes is move to Washington or California or Nevada or someplace. No one's taken me up on it yet, at least not out of Oregon. I've moved some people from anyway. But I'm sure that now that the Washington tax is eliminated, the pressure for them to move outside of Oregon will be increased as the amount of Oregon tax increases. Maybe more than anyone, I think CPAs understand the financial plight that the state is in. They realize that the inheritance tax may not be huge in the dollar amount of tax it generates, but they can easily do the math to calculate how many teachers would lose their jobs if the tax were eliminated. But we do ask, so we don't necessarily expect the whole thing to be eliminated, but I think we do ask that the tax be made less complicated, easier to calculate, and not have the computational idiosyncrasies that the current system has built into it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Doug, let me just ask, Doug, relative to 2293, House Bill 2293 that Jeff has testified on, do you believe that 2293 would remove those complexities and idiosyncrasies?
I think it would help a lot, yes.
Okay,
Chairman.
Certainly. Okay. Let me ask this one other question relative to the components of gross estate value as represented by Elizabeth. Elizabeth gave us slide number 12, which indicates the number one value for estate taxes for estates in Oregon, or well, components of U.S. estate, at 36% stock, number two, 19% other, including partnerships and other farm assets and those kinds of things, and then number three, real estate at 16%, number four, cash at 11%. That represents the bulk of every estate. Is that pretty much the way that you see your clients in Oregon, or would that blend be a little different in Oregon from the clients that you're looking at? The reason I'm asking this this way, Doug, is if they've only got 16%, number three asset, in real estate, then the rest of these, well, with perhaps the exception of farm assets or maybe farm partnerships or other partnerships which have nexus in Oregon, the rest of these are pretty much intangible and they move with them. So that's why I wanted to know if amongst your client base there was the ability of the flexibility for clients to move around.
I think there's a fair amount of flexibility, Chairman Butler. I think that it really varies based upon the size of the estate. I think the clients that I have, a fair amount of the assets are in stocks and bonds and other intangibles, maybe partnership interests, those sorts of things. And as maybe even more so as the value of the estate increases when they have more interest in closely held businesses, which would set up so they're intangible so you can avoid
Oregon and Texas. Yes, Texas. Okay, questions? Yes, Representative Riley is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jeff, when the chair asked Doug about 2293 reducing the complexity, and he said that it would reduce it significantly, I noticed that you shook your head a little, and I just wondered if you disagree with that.
Well, I think in the overall issue, 2293 is focused on a very specific problem, and that is existing credit shelter trusts that wouldn't qualify for a state QTIP election. And so it solves that problem, but the bigger picture of a more simplified tax rate, that doesn't address it all. Because our charge was to bring something to the legislature that was revenue neutral and to fix the problem.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Hass is recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen, for your presentations. Doug, we've heard a lot of rhetoric about on this issue about some people selling off the family farm to pay their inheritance tax. And I look at this graph that shows, on average, real estate represents around 16% of an average gross estate. And I was just wondering if you, with your clients, if you've ever had to advise someone or saw the need to sell the family farm in order to pay their inheritance tax.
Chairman Butler, Representative Hass, I think that with regard to the Oregon inheritance tax, in the past it's always been an issue of, you know, either you pay it to Oregon or you pay it to the federal, and there's really no issue there. So there's really no reason to move in order to not have to sell the family farm or whatever. There might be a few states you might avoid because they had a higher inheritance tax than the federal credit, but there really hasn't been. And I think even under the structure we currently have, it's not so onerous of a tax that they're doing this in order to have to sell the family farm. But nevertheless, I think that if they have significant assets, and once you get elderly, if you're in a nursing home in Oregon or a nursing home in Washington, I'm not sure it makes a whole lot of difference to them at that point in time, or if they're retired and they've they no longer have the business going on, no longer have those relationships. I think it becomes easier to retire to someplace in order to save your heirs a significant amount of inheritance tax.
But typically by that point, Doug, they will have, recognizing that they're faced with selling the family farm and the family business, they would have done some estate planning prior to that time, incorporating it, giving shares of stock out to various family members so that it doesn't become necessary for them to actually liquidate the family farm or to liquidate the family business. I think that probably is more expensive, responsive to work.
I agree with, and I think we should try to get rid of the, what did you say, the complicational idiosyncrasies?
It's something like that, yes.
Yeah, so I like that phrase.
Other questions?
Yes, sure.
Representative Oakley. Sure.
Yeah, first a comment. I'm beginning to realize that the Economic Growth and Tax Relief Reconciliation Act of 2001 was actually the Full Employment Act for accountants and attorneys. How many farmers do you represent? How many farm accounts do you have, roughly, as a percentage?
Chairman Butler, Representative Boakvist, I probably have, specific to farmers, maybe a dozen. We have an office in Klamath Falls, which has a large number of farmers. Our office in Medford has some, but in the practitioners, I'm getting phone calls from are from around the state, and so some of them are in more rural areas where farming is a large percentage of what they do.
A follow-up,
Representative.
Just for the record, I've experienced this in my family. The family farm got slaughtered, in fact. And, of course, this was in 1997, so it has drastically improved, but literally the family farm got sold. Everything had to be liquidated to meet the IRS requirement. So that myth is more than a myth. There are still problems, and I would agree with Representative Hassan. It comes to issues. Got to fix the tweaking problems of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you very much, gentlemen. We appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. Jeff, did you have another question?
One additional comment that I think could be addressed when you're talking about sort of reconnection. Neither one of us talked about, but you sort of get rid of a compliance issue, because if you have taxpayers that are required to file federal returns, you've got a tracking method that you don't have for those that don't.
Certainly, and that also is part of the state flight issue that we're looking at, because I'm wondering how many folks that just happened to pass away living in their retirement home in Las Vegas or somewhere in Arizona. When the accountants start looking at it down in Arizona and New Mexico or wherever and saying, gee, Christmas, you've been here for this many winters for this long and you just happen to die down here, why don't we just declare you to be a resident somewhere in the Southwest as opposed to back in that state of Oregon? So that's got to be an issue that you're faced with frequently. I know that I had clients when I was actively involved in my accounting practice that wanted to dub themselves both Idaho residents and Washington residents, alternative from time to time, and you'd say, wait a minute, you just can't baptize at fish because you think you'd like to have fish that day. You've got to be a genuine resident of Nevada or Colorado or rather Washington or one of those tax-free states. Thank you very much. Colleagues, 1:30 tomorrow, we'll be taking up the three bills. Thanks again for taking time out of your busy schedule.
Thank you.
Well, I think the cookies came from Representative Esty.
Bring him Christy.
Oh.
Now, Christy.
Christy.
Thank you, Christy.
Thank you, Christy.
Father died. Christy, you need that.